And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 691. You see Ben on the other side of the screen. It's not a fab recap, folks. Season's over, which is pretty sweet. Playoffs are on. Padres and Braves just started up here in game one. We're going to recap Ben's main event season, the big league we kept following as the season went on. We're going to get the process start to finish, how things work there. But before we do that, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric. And my co-host on the show over here, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing very well, Bubba. As I've been saying throughout the end of the season, I'm relieved that it's over. I'm going to miss it, though. We were just talking about different aspects of the season. And so I think I'm going to stay a little more in tune going into the offseason now, especially if I'm going to keep coming on the show every once in a while. And but I'm not going to be fully back. I'm not going to be like you, where I'm going to be drafting in like a couple weeks or anything like that. I'll wait for that, but I'm looking forward to watching the postseason for sure. I know, like Brian and others have said, it's nice to just be able to watch the games and not worry about how your teams are doing. I'll try to take advantage of that for sure. And it was a little busy to watch too much today, but over the next few days, I'm definitely going to try to watch a lot more than I did.
Yeah, Tatis just went ding-dong city, which is good because for anybody that's listened to any of my content the last couple of days, I've picked the Padres to get their first World Series in franchise history. And in my pennant drafts for underdog, heavy Padres vibes on that. So the way the early games went, Ben and I were talking off the air, all the basically underdogs were winning. And Ben said that doesn't bode well for the Padres. And I'm sitting there going, it needs to bode well for the Padres. Like the Padres need to get it together here because I'm not confident in many other teams taking down the Dodgers. So let's get this show going. But yeah, playoffs are great because like you said, it's one of those, we don't have to stress about our teams. We get to go back to doing what got us into fantasy to begin with, our love for baseball, at least most of us. Now, given there's some crazies out there that are just like, Phil's even said, it's like, I love numbers and this is how it works type things. But I think most of us got into fantasy baseball because we love baseball. I guess pretty simple to go with. So it's a great time of year to chill, enjoy. Hopefully your team's in it. If not, you know, you hang out with me. We have a good time. Ben will do his thing, you know, the evil empire and all that fun stuff. But we'll see how all that plays out and have fun along the way. But yeah, we're going to recap some stuff here. And like we said, like, you know, in the coming weeks, I'll have other guests on like I always do. But Ben's going to come back, you know, he could come. It might be weekly, bi-weekly, whatever. He's going to be a regular still throughout the offseason. We're going to go back and look at projections versus reality like we've done in the past. That's a fun kind of look back on the validity and how good projections were, and do a lot of strategy talk. We'll do Yahoo stuff. We'll do some other deals to kind of keep you in the mindset to see how things went in 2024, get you ready for 2025. As people know, and if you followed me long enough, the train doesn't stop around this place. So I'm a little crazy in that mindset, but you don't get to 691 episodes by stopping. So we just keep rolling, folks, and see where it goes. And on this episode, I already said at the beginning, but I'll rehash it. Ben's been keeping us updated. For a while, he did not. Todd Whitestone had to remind us that, hey, can you ask Ben how his like top five main event team is doing? How his top 20? It's scuffled towards the end. That happens. That is very difficult to stay up there. Still finished well. So we're going to see where that goes. But Ben, before we talk about that main event team, just to be fair, just for our listeners, how'd everything else go for you this year? Because I mentioned mine on Bubba and the Bloom. If you guys listen to it, you got the rundown. If you guys watched the YouTube video, I legit shared my screen. You could see all of my standings on the NFBC. There was nothing being hidden there. So you don't have to do that by any means. But how'd things go for you this year? Because winning one main event would be tons good enough for me, but I know you're competitive and you had some other stakes involved.
Yeah, well, I did go ahead. I already tweeted out my NFB standings, if anyone had seen that already. If not, it's on my Twitter, but I'll quickly just go through it. So I did 8 NFBC Fab Leagues plus my Yahoo Home League, but I'll discuss NFBC here. It's weird. So if you look at my standings as a whole, you would say, okay, not bad, because I cashed in 3 of my 8 leagues, and then I had a 4th and a 5th and a 7th, and then I had my other 2 main events were 10th and 12th. So those weren't good, but I was competitive in almost all my leagues, but because of the main event slipping, and this is, I'm going to say it's the issue I have with the main event, but it's not really an issue. It's because it's so much more money to play the main event that you almost have to like win or finish in second in at least one of them to really make a positive ROI, unless your other leagues that you play are up in like a similar buy-in. But so I, because of this, the one slipping, I ended up being a little bit negative in the money, but I still got money back this year. It was just having being in first for so many weeks, and then literally the last week I dipped to third. It was hard, but like I was saying on the show leading up to that, it was mentally draining a little bit, and I had accepted the fact that there's a chance that I may not win. So it definitely made it easier in the end, but it was still a top 100 team, and people usually give that as a good estimate of it being a good team. So I'm happy with how it did, and it was definitely a tough league. Like Toby was in that league, Mike the Mouth was in the league, Tyler Young was in the league. So definitely a challenging league, and I'm glad with how the team did overall. But yeah, so I don't know. Overall, I think that I'm a little disappointed with how my year went, but I don't know. I hold myself to a high standard, I guess. And yeah. Not winning stinks in any of my leagues, but I did place or cash in three, like I said. So it's still solid.
It's still good. It's still good. And it's tough. Like Ryan said it, I think, really well on Sunday night, that winning one league, especially a 15 team league, is insanely difficult. So if you can win one and you walk away with that, that's pretty darn good. Some guys have amazing seasons. I saw some people win like 5 of 8 main events and stuff. I'm like, good God. Like, and a lot of that also, and I have not seen rosters, pure speculation off my brain. Like, so don't tell me like, Bubba, you're full of, like, just trust me. It's just pure off the top. I'm assuming most of us have players we like to target in drafts. If those, like you call it a core per se. And then as you're going through your drafts, there's pockets where you're going to take similar players throughout your drafts. That's just how it works. So if those cores did well, you should do more consistently well throughout the year, if that makes sense. So I'm guessing the people that win like a lot, like 5 out of 8s or whatever, I'm guessing they probably had a similar core and a couple other parts that carried them through that process. That is zero slight on anybody. I'm just saying it's one of those that could work really great one year. It could crush your entire season the next year type thing. And that's just how it works. That's the name of the game. So it could be something too.
That's one thing I struggle with even now, thinking about for next year. So I've been looking at going through my draft boards. Even I started last night looking at it after everything kind of finalized, just starting the look back process. And I remember going into last season, one thing I really wanted to do was try to diversify as much as possible. Didn't always happen to the best. And it was more on the pitching side. And that kind of bit me a little bit, especially in DCs. But like, yeah, like I remember in 2022 when I finished third overall in the main event and I won like 4 leagues that year, I had a lot of Dansby Swanson in it, and he was like a top whatever player. I had him on like 4 or 5 teams. So to your point, it is probably more likely than not that these people that win a huge amount of leagues probably have that to some degree. But like you said, there's the downside of if 2 of your guys get hurt and they're relatively early picks, it can really sink your season. So that balance is tough when you go into the draft season trying to figure out what your attack plan is and spreading the risk around. So it's like in a 15 teamer, you need to be more risk mindful. In a 12 teamer where you can add guys more easily on free agency, you can kind of go for your targets, I guess, more, but we have a lot of time to figure out that plan for next year.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like you said, you're going back and looking at yours. I kind of hinted at it on fab shows we've done. Like I have, it seemed like every league I either crushed hitting and sucked at pitching or vice versa. And I need to look at the approach in draft. And then how did that change throughout the year? Like, was there something that made it so, like, was it just, hey, I had these pitchers targeted, half of them got hurt, and like trying to rebuild from there, it's just tricky. That could be an easy answer. Probably not always that easy. So there's probably more to it that, and I remember there's like I love doing when we recap positions on Bubba and the Bloom with Ryan. It's always fun to look at ADP pockets and be like, 3 pitchers, 2 sucked in that one and 1 did well. Did you pick the right one? And it's like, in the end, this is a crapshoot. Like we can do the best we can to kind of, you know, predict the future, but let's be real. Who's predicting the future unless you're Oz the Mentalist? You're probably not doing too well on this one. So that's the fun in it. So that's why I kind of circling back. Just winning one main event is pretty sweet. Like I won 1 of 3 OCs, and I know there's people like I just saw Drew Forte, who won the overall last year. He cashed in 5 of 5 OCs. Like some people are just bred with the mindset for this stuff. It's nuts. But our buddy the Guilds, who will understand this concept, he had like 3 straight years of top 5 overall teams. He won the overall. This year he did not have a great year because he's very risky guy in the OCs and just didn't work out. That happens. That's the game we play. So it's fun. And taking the one is a pretty good thing. So enjoy that one while you can. All right, let's have some fun diving into this. First off, I'm going to kind of mix things in and out. The main event, Ben, it only drafts in March. Usually only drafts, what, the last 3 weeks of the month, 2 weeks of the month? There's online and there's live. I know yours were online. Yes. Did you wait towards the end? Like, how did you approach this one before you really dig in on it?
Yes, looking at the calendar, I think the first one was March 12th, which was, the start of the last 3 weeks of the month. And I typically like to wait mainly for any last-minute injuries or manager decisions. So I drafted around the final weekend. I think I drafted the Friday night before that last weekend, and then I did the Sunday night draft and a Monday night draft. I'm debating going for an earlier draft this year. I think there's something to it. I believe Jason Santo, who was competing for the main event overall.
Second, third overall. Did pretty good.
Yeah. Hats off to Jason for a phenomenal year. I mean, Clark Olson won us. Congrats to Clark. But for Jason to be two teams in the top three, that's unheard of. So great job by both of them. But I think he drafted one of the first mains. And I think there's something to it because if you have your player rankings down pretty well in your evaluations, and I mean, really at that point, all you really have to go off is DC ADP. And it's hard to filter out by the higher value DCs. So everyone's kind of just guessing at what's going to happen. I'll probably do two. I don't know if I'll do three. I did a third this year because I had a free one from a qualifier. So I'm sure I'll do two at least. And then maybe I'll do one early and then I'll do the second one after Vegas drafts. I don't know. So, but yeah, this past year I did them all relatively late in the spring training time frame.
Yeah. It's fun because, the argument, like even like idiots like myself will draft in October, November. It's you can get a ton of discounts if you trust your system, you trust your player analysis, but you also have a ton of risk of injury and a lot of things in those regards. And even drafting in March, when you're talking about spending, almost $2,000 on a team, how much risk are you willing to take? Like you said, 12s, you can take some risks, take some hits. I know guys that took Spencer Strider and still won their leagues. Like you can work around things, as crazy as that sounds. In a main event, a lot trickier. Not saying it can't be done, a lot trickier. And that's just the kind of the little things. Like the earlier you draft, like you said, no ADP, get some gifts. You can get some gifts that drop to you. At the same time, it's a longer period of spring training where other things can take place. So it just depends on what kind of risk tolerance you're willing to take. And injuries are going to happen regardless. Just you hope it's later in the season when that takes place and where it goes there. So interesting to hear you say that, because I remember 2 years ago, my OCs, I spread them out. Like one was late February, like second week of March, and like the night before the season. Night before the season did great. So this last year, I did all second week of March on. My last one did the best again. It's really weird. So, but this last year, I was top five in every one of them. So it wasn't like I got crushed, but in the previous season, my very first one was horrific. All the injuries, everything on the face, but it was bad, bad, bad. So I'm torn on a lot of those things, but I get it. Cause like you said, I've looked at a lot of rosters going, man, you got who in what round? Like that's a game changer type stuff. So I'm with you on that as well.
And we were talking about him before we recorded, but Steve Weimer won the DC overall. So congrats to Steve. Yes. He drafted in October, that team.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So he drafted a DC in October with all that risk, like no waiver moves. And he won the overall because he had all these phenomenal values. Like Steve does his own projections and he just was able to get so ahead of the curve that he took advantage of it. So good for him.
Yeah. Steve's a beast. We were talking about him earlier and congrats to Steve. You had another amazing season. Let's put it that way. Cause it seems like it's just, the whole quote repeatable or reusable tweet or whatever. Yeah. This time next year, we'll probably be saying it again, but man, good Lord, what he pulled off there. But we're not going to say kudos to everybody, but a lot of great stuff out there. You guys crushed it. You mentioned Clark Olson, main event. Steve DC, John Posma won the OC overall, which is insane. That's his third overall title, which is pretty good stuff. Not OC overall, but third in general overall for Posma. So yeah, a lot of great stuff out there. So you drafted this one later in March, you were saying. All right, let's kick it off then. You got pick 12. You had KDS. Maybe it's too far to think back. Were you hoping for the back end of the draft? Was that your target zone, or how did this play out? Because I know you're structured when you get your picks, you start you kind of have a game plan.
Yes, but in terms of KDS, I think I may have just left it 1 through 15 this year. In the past, as I've got introduced to the KDS concept, I've messed around with changing the order around. But I think I realized the way the first round was shaking out that I just wanted to whatever happened. And of course, I don't think it's 12th high on my list, but I made it work to some degree. But yeah, so, and you mentioned I do map out my main events. I think I usually go roughly 15 rounds in. So, but when I do that, I use ADP. So if I were to draft early this upcoming season, I wouldn't be able to use that same process because I wouldn't have ADP to go off of when I go to plan out my draft. I would just be going off my rankings probably, or I'd have to use DC ADP as a proxy. And then hopefully it kind of lines up. But yeah, so I go out and I'll kind of mix positions. So say like in the second round, maybe I want to, in this draft I took Lindor, but maybe I also had Zach Wheeler as an option if he was there, or I don't know anyone else, but sometimes I'll say, okay, I want a closer in this round based on how ADP is looking, or I want a starter here. And sometimes if it's kind of, I can't think of the word, but if it's up in the air, I'll go either way. I have that already down in my mind because I write it out. And then, so it's kind of like with you, like you like to write things out as well. So like when you write it out, you kind of remember it more. So it's like I already drafted because I'm going through the player pool. And then when the clock's on, it's a lot less stressful because you kind of have a plan in front of you in your mind. And I like doing it. So, I mean, it takes practice to go through that. And it takes time to like really have to dedicate yourself to going through the draft like that. But once you get used to it, it's not terrible. Like I have a process for that now. So,
and that's one thing I'm going to keep trying to, you know, reiterate or really bang across people's heads is it takes a lot of time. A lot of like you need to put, and I'm not saying you can't just show up and win one. Yeah, I think it's possible. But Ben and a lot of these players that do very well in these events, Ben, like you mentioned Steve Weimer, there's Phil Dussault. I've had Toby on the show for years and we've talked about his process. The really, really good players. I remember at First Pitch Arizona, I think it was last year, the NFBC panel, Vlad Sedler hosted it. It was Steve Weimer, Potts, and I think there might have been Toby. No, Toby wasn't there last year. Somebody else on the panel. And it was funny. Like the take-home message when Ryan and I walked out, we were like, we're never winning. And someone was like, why do you say that? I'm all, we don't have the time these guys have. And like the ridiculous just like mindset. And again, I'm not trying to scare people off. Like you can still do it. Just know there's a lot that goes into just, you're not just picking players and sitting down at 4 o'clock on a Sunday and, you know, doing the fab. These guys are looking at schedules. They're looking at projections. They're doing a bunch of things along the lines. So, all right, let's talk about the draft here. You went your first few picks here, rounds one through five. You went Harper, Lindor. So you got a good base. I said Lindor worked out pretty well for you. Probably felt pretty rough to start out, but finished strong. And then you went Fried, Grayson, and C. So three starting pitchers. We know the main event is popular for moving pitching up. You weigh that you didn't take one in the first two rounds. You had that back end of the pitch, pounded some top tier hitters, and then you went pitching. Was that kind of a game plan going in? Did you want to lock in some aces or how did you go about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the plan. So looking at the macro level again. So one thing I really struggled in this year overall across my eight teams was pitching points. So I was very hitter dominant and that's how I carried most of my teams in terms of points. This was by far my best pitching team. And I don't think it's a surprise when you see me go Fried, Grayson, and Cease. But so I switched it up because before this, I was at least doing two starters. So I don't know, pocket aces is a thing when Toby kind of started doing that, but he was doing it in the first two rounds. So my thinking was there's so many good hitters and I didn't think the top pitchers didn't really separate themselves that much from like Fried and Grayson and guys like that who are going in the third and fourth round 15s. So get two stud hitters because I always think, because when you listen to pods all the time, like we do, and you make pods all the time and you have guests on, I think one thing that always gets lost is RBIs and runs and player analysis and having Harper and Lindor. Harper was a little disappointment. I mean, he was in the high 80s, but that's 180 RBIs and runs right there. And as you go further into the draft, and like most people know who listen to the show now, I'm big into projections. And those run and RBI total projections kind of really drop off as you go farther into the draft. So getting that those two solid base hitters, I really wanted. I did this year and it paid off because my hitting was so good. My issue, and I didn't have it in this team though, was going back into pitching even heavier to make up for it. But yes, the one pick that really stands out here was Cease, because I think I tweeted about how like the trade going to San Diego wasn't going to lower his walk rate. I guess it did though, because he had a much better whip this year. And I did it for the strikeouts primarily. I said, okay, well, I'll switch it up. I didn't have Grayson yet up until this point. I didn't have Cease yet. I did have Fried on a team or two, I think. And I've always been a Max Fried fan, but yeah, I kind of want to go back to this concept. I think at least the way I'm thinking about going into next year is the two base hitters and then attack starters hard.
No, I love that approach. I know in OCs, I think I went three or four hitters, which 12s versus 15s allows that. But I kind of saw something similar in the out of the elite pitchers, and there's just a giant group of good pitchers. Like, but where it differentiates, and what you did though, and obviously a lot of this will be kept in hindsight looking at results. But what I loved about it is, if you're going to wait, you know, you can play the ratio games, which you kind of did with Fried, but then Grayson, you had high expectations for the way he finished 22. And the Cease call I loved because you mentioned, I'll take the gamble with the whiffs. We know he can get strikeouts, because the biggest thing that usually separates the elite pitchers in the first few rounds, ratios and strikeouts. Like, these are the best strikeout guys, the best ratio guys. So you kind of put it all together, because Fried, sometimes he's a strikeout guy, sometimes he just disappears, but regardless, usually good at ratios. But with Cease, for anybody that lived under a rock, Dylan Cease had the fourth most strikeouts in baseball this year at 224, behind Skubal, who had 228, Sale 225, Wheeler 224. So Cease technically tied for third. So that says a lot about what went right there, because to get that many strikeouts in round five, very difficult to do. Obviously, Skubal was a gift. Sale was a gift. Wheeler, he had to take early. So it's kind of actually funny looking at this leaderboard here. Skubal was late. Sale was late. Cease, you got in the fifth round. Reagan's probably going somewhere around there. But Kikuchi went late. Sonny Gray went. Like, a lot of these elite strikeout guys weren't from the top this year. A lot, maybe, you know, Strider got hurt and whatnot. But, yeah, how did you feel like when you're going through your draft, how are you trying to set up? Because I know you have your projections out. You probably have a tracker going on. As you're making these picks, two good hitters, three good starting pitchers, what numbers or kind of floors are you trying to look for as you're going through this draft to know, okay, now I need to take a third starting pitcher, or now I can pivot to so-and-so, so on and so forth as you go through?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, and you were correct. So in my fantasy baseball quote-unquote spreadsheet that I create every year, I've already created 2025s. I'm ready to drop some this year's data into it. I'm crazy, but
beautiful. You're not crazy.
I'm ready to go, man. Yeah. So I import projections. I aggregate three sources. I usually do BatX, Steamer, ATC. Just average those together, a third each. Put those in here, and then I have some simple formulas that. So when I make a pick, I put like a one for the round next to the player's name. So when it's a one or 1 through 30, it's my pick. Everyone else is like a 999. Just get them out of the way. So then it plops everyone who has a number less than 30 or lower into a separate spreadsheet, or it accounts for their projections. And then I compare that to an average. So I also have the average per player. So in the NFBC lineup, you have 14 active hitter spots. And I use the 80th percentiles if I'm drafting for the main event, if I'm drafting in that. And I also have the DC 80th percentiles if I'm drafting a DC. And so say like when Lindor and Harper are gone, their projections come out of the 80th percentile totals. And then I divide what's left by 12. And that's my new target per player though. So if you're taking a catcher early, they're going to be very good, but you're kind of missing out on overall stats if you're looking for that overall mindset, which I do in the main event. But if you do the overall mindset, there's a good chance it works. You're going to win your league anyway,
Can I stop you there real quick?
Yep. Go ahead.
You mentioned overall mindset. Can you like elaborate on that more for people? Because I've mentioned it to others, like I don't have that overall mindset. Like I'm drafting to win my league. But then you look at these guys, like you've mentioned before, the Weimers, I've mentioned Guilds. So like Toby, always, somehow they're always competing in the, like you see their names in the overall. You've been in competing pretty much every year. Your name pops up. It's not I don't think it's a fluke to see the same names And I don't have that mindset. So you said that a few times before we go farther on that. What is that overall mindset?
Okay, yeah. So, and just to put it simply, so we haven't gotten to the rest of my draft yet, but I'll bring it up there. And that is, so in the main event, for example, if you're trying to compete for the overall, you have to beat 854 teams. So that's pretty daunting when you think about it. So you need stats, and you need, not only do you need stats, but you need stats that you can rely on. So that's why I like going for the safer hitters. Pitchers are a different story, but if you think about it though, so if you're if you're a fan of taking an early closer, what does a closer get you? Saves, maybe good ratios, but if you're lucky, 60 innings of good ratios. And if it's Edwin Diaz at his peak, you get 100 Ks, but that's half of a good starter at that point. So in my mind, an early closer doesn't help you enough in the overall, in the other four pitching categories, to warrant taking them that early. I mean, if you're able to hit on like 2022 Robbie Ray and whoever else Phil drafted that year, whoever the other big pick was that ended up being an ace, okay, you can make it work. But I don't think that's a reliable strategy for doing it. And I mentioned the catchers though too. So yeah, Adley Rutschman is, and even your boy William, they're the top of the tier. But when you look at their stat lines compared to the hitters that are going early, so. I think in the meatball draft, I discussed how I thought William may have gone a little too early in the third round. In the third round this year, in my main event draft, Vlad Guerrero went there. Vlad's stats blew away William's stat line. I mean, William was pretty good in runs and stuff, but the homers, I think Vlad had him by a good amount. Gunner won in the third round here. You'd rather have Gunner than William if you're looking at the overall picture when you have to compete against all the other teams. So, in a standalone league, there is value to having a top catcher because you're kind of taking that away from your competitors. But there's so many other teams and other leagues in an overall mindset that you really have to hit on your later picks to make up for what you're losing by taking a catcher or a closer early, I think. So yeah, hopefully that made sense.
That made a ton of sense, honestly, because I'd like to use the comparisons like, you know, wait on this position, or if you take this position early, what's the trade-off value? What are you missing? Type discussion compared to like when you get a catcher later, it's always a discussion point. And I'm obviously pro catcher. We've established this. I'm pro William Contreras, and I had a lot of William this year. Honestly, it wasn't intentional. Like he'd fall to like round 5 or 6 in an OC and whatever. Still, it's almost the same as around 3 or 4 in a 15, but it felt different because just OCs are a different animal, but still your point's the same in that. What could I have gotten round 6 instead of William and going to get catchers later could have definitely helped me in the overall. And that maybe that's why I don't succeed well in the overall, but I'm competitive in my leagues per se type situation. So that's why I think it's a topic that I want to learn so much more about each year, just because I'm just curious of how do I stay competitive yet I'm so far off. Like my winning team in the OC was 320th overall. Like that's pretty crazy if you really start wanting to think about things. So I was just curious on that one. But back to your point, because we'll talk more about the overall, like you said, later in your draft. Do you want to move on to the next 5? Or I know I cut you off. What else did you have to say on that kind of system?
No, I think we're good with the first 5.
Okay. We'll go down to the next 5 here. You went Cody Bellinger. So you went back to bats. Then you got your first closer in Alzolay. Michael King is your 4th starting pitcher with your 8th round pick. Obviously, King was a beast. Strikeout department, he's a top 10 strikeout guy. So that on top of your C's, boom, boom. And then you went Ketel Marte, which obviously helped in round 9. That is a steal. Like we talk about winning any league, you need to have a couple of these. Probably to compete in an overall, you need to have a couple of these for sure. Marte in round 9, Tyrell round 10, who sucked for all of us, but at the time was a great pick. So you went 3 out of 5 hitters, got your first closer, 4th starting pitcher. So what was your mindset in this? Cause my guess is to go with the 4th starting pitcher there, your projection said something is what stood out to me. So how did you go through this pack of 5?
Honestly, I think it was a switch up because looking at my draft boards, I waited much longer to take my SP4 and my DCs and my other main that was drafted prior to this. And I think that was a mistake. I mean, if I had taken someone like Chris Bassett, who also went in this round, it wouldn't have been a mistake because Chris Bassett did not do very well this year. But it's also like it comes down to hitting the right guys, of course. But Yeah, I really like going back to that fourth SP. I think there's value in going back to that SP well early. And I looking at who went afterwards, I don't think I say the full board, but it was just more of, okay, I'll just switch things up. I'll attack starters heavy here and to see what happens. Kind of like, because at least I know I fall into this trap, and maybe you do too, and I'm sure others do as well. But you like once I start drafting DCs, I kind of find like a sweet spot for how I like my teams to look based on ADP and how my rankings are. And it's kind of tough when you're, especially in a main event, where you have so much on the line, that to kind of break out from what feels comfortable. And at least for this team, I mean, it paid off going with the king here. And so I'll stop there. So that's kind of like my king spiel. I'll go into the Azalea pick next though too.
I want to go into that because I want to piggyback on it. So King's your fourth starting pitcher, then he went to Azalea as your first closer, which again, I was a big Azalea guy. You can't predict injuries. So I'm assuming if Azalea is the pick, there are a lot of closers have gone, but kind of to your catcher overall comment earlier and stuff, taking an early closer, you did mention closers earlier when you talked about that with Edwin and stuff. Doesn't really pan out in the overall concept. Might help you to win your league. Might get you all the saves you need. Totally makes sense. But to win it overall, so is that why you kind of waited? But you took Azalea knowing you had to start taking somebody?
Yeah, so I remember I'm sure you remember, but maybe listeners don't, but we lost a lot of closers in spring training. And this was after that kind of happened. I remember thinking to myself, okay, I had this huge pool of closers who I'd like as my RP1. And then that ended up being like 12, 11, 10 closers. So the list got really small by the time this draft took place. And Azalea was kind of like the last of that RP1 that I was comfortable with. And going into this past draft season, my thought was, and I kind of already said about the overall mindset, but it was to try to be one of the last people to draft my C1 and my RP1, but then one of the first to draft my C2 and my RP2, because I wanted to get like in the middle. So okay, I'll take a hit with not having a top tier at that position, but then I want my second of that position to be better than everyone else's.
I love that philosophy, because that's something I preach in catchers. Like everyone kept asking my catchers thing. I'm like, hey, if you can get William at a good price, I'm all for getting William. Like that's dude's light years ahead of your other catchers. Like he just is. And eventually that'll come back to earth. Right now he's proving time and time again with all the everyday at-bats. It's great. But like you said, I always kept saying there's like, in catchers like 10 to 16 I liked a ton, so if I could wait, and that's why I ended up with a lot of Ohapi, a lot of Naylor, who didn't work out obviously, but on paper at the time as your catcher two felt good. It was like Ohapi, Naylor, and a couple other guys. Like I had a window, so a lot of my teams have like the same three or four dudes. But it's just, my point is, it's the same philosophy you had. It's if you're gonna quote unquote punt the position, like some might say, back it up strong. Like don't punt the position. Go get a good like back end catcher one. And so I just wanted to like reiterate that I had the same philosophy with closers. Like my league I won in, I waited. It was one of my few leagues, and I ended up with Evan Phillips and Ryan Helsley. That worked out pretty darn good. So now that that was my only league I had Helsley in, because I did not think he was worth it, but it was to your concept. It's like, hey, if I'm going to wait, I'm going to go. And I went back. I was on the turn in that league. I was at the one pick and I went back. Boom, boom. Like those are the first two picks I made type thing. So, and they're like round 9 and 10 in a dozy or something. But sorry, back to what you're saying. I love that concept. I want people to kind of remember that one even throughout the season, off season when we talk more. There's nothing wrong with waiting. Just don't wait and completely blow up the position either. Right. So, okay.
And you got to make sure you like who you're waiting for. Like yes. Wilson Contreras was going later. He was going in the 140, 150 yep. range. Cal Raleigh. I wish I had him on more teams.
A lot of home runs, yes.
Yeah. A lot of those guys didn't pan out, but there are about half of them probably did, if I had to guess, without looking at it. So.
Well, and then the other part, again, I apologize. It always comes into a catcher's pod with me. But
I started this kind of.
Yeah, but it's just if you're going to kind of quote-unquote punt a position that makes it easier to drop, these are cheap fab acquisitions. So they're not going to break your bank to fix it. Where if you kind of punt, you know, a certain pitch, like starting pitching, or you punt a position, like say you punt first base. Well, the waiver wire ain't rich in first base. So if a guy comes up, you're going to have to break the bank to get him type thing. Where catchers, you can kind of play the game. We've seen it all the last couple of years. You can play that game for cheap and you might hit on a Joey Bart for a month, or you might hit on something else and you're fine. So back to it. But if you're going to, like, there's a reason you kind of wait on some of these guys compared to other positions as well.
Right. Yeah. And so when I was crafting my strategy for this year for the main event specifically, I was looking back at what happened in my team that did really well in 2022, and I waited on closer, and my catcher that year was Dalton Varsho, but he was like a cheat code. I got him in the seventh round that year, so I had success waiting on closer that year and kind of catcher as well. So I figured, okay. Also, you have, like I said before, you have to have the right players for a strategy to work, but I like the way it felt like going down that path, you know? So.
I'm with you there. Let's go through the next five now. Because you got Cattell. That's great. And Tyro, I apologize if I had any impact on that. But then this is where it gets fun again. You got Santander, who obviously monster season. Cedric Mullins, we won't get into that just yet. Jonah Heim is your first catcher at pick 13. That's pretty good. The season wasn't ideal, but the value
started out pretty good.
Yeah, the quote-unquote value at that point, pretty sweet. Then Kyle Finnegan in round 14 is your second closer. That is amazing, considering the depth of this league. Then Nick Lodolo at 15, that's worth the flyer. And when you drafted, reports were getting better. So it made sense at the time. That would have been your SP5. If Lodolo would stayed healthy all year as your SP5, holy shnikes, you might have won the whole thing. What's your thoughts on this little realm here, these five picks?
Yeah, I don't know why nobody wanted Santander. I wish I had him in more leagues. I don't think he was necessarily a target for me. I don't think I expected to get him in the 11th round like I did. So I was happy with that. And then the Mullins, I distinctly remember thinking about Mullins and being like flip-flopping my take on him in spring training, because he was batting leadoff for the Orioles. He seemed like he was playing every day. So I took him as a full-time leadoff hitter with that mindset. And also I needed some steals. Cause I didn't really like Lindor was my big steals guy. Cattell doesn't project for many. Bellinger, you're not really sure. I was hoping for like 30 from Tyro, but then after that, maybe Harper gets 10. So I really needed the steals from Mullins. I got steals in other places, luckily, but yeah, the Mullins. So had I known that he was going to be a platoon batting seventh, there's no way I'm picking him at this point in the draft. If I could redo that pick. And of course, once I dropped him, he did better. Like
by the end of the season, he was barely platooning again. It was like, it was just a total.
He almost went 20-30, and yeah, he was not even crazy. Close to that for me, I'm sure.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I guess like pat on my back, I kind of like had the right idea, but it was a bumpy road to get there. Yeah. And yeah, like the Heim, I remember him falling. I was like, please don't, no one draft Heim, because I definitely wanted an earlier catcher. I don't know if I wanted to wait till the 13th round, which is it covers pick 180 in a 15 teamer. But I was fine with Heim as my catcher one. And then Finnegan, he was one of the last RPs that I was comfortable as my RP2. And I mean, he had like 38 saves, so that was huge as well. And then Lodolo, it was really the finger thing that screwed him up. Like he was doing so well till he first got that blister or the groin injury. Yep. And I was big on Lodolo, but I don't know. I'm not really upset with that pick.
If
he stayed healthy, I think it would have hit.
Yeah, at that point in the draft, you are legit picking a potential Cy Young winner. Like the dude's got that kind of talent. I know it's like the ceiling play, but the dude is that talented. So like I said, it's SP5. That's ridiculous to throw that out there. Those are the kind of moves that you take when you're, especially if you're like on like the overall mindset. So I totally get that. All right. We flip it over to the back half. Before we talk about the last 15 picks, I just want to ask for people kind of, you know, I know draft season is not upon many of you, but as you're going through your draft, we like to talk about, you know, the early rounds. It's not simple, but these guys are all stars for the most part. And you're making your picks and you're not taking the best available player, but in a roundabout way, you kind of are to fit your team. As the draft goes on, now you're feeling team needs, but you're also trying to take chances and whatnot. How does your philosophy change as it goes through the draft? You know, the last picks, a lot of people say you take picks so they're easy drops and you churn and burn type thing. As you get to this midway point to the back end of the draft, how does your philosophy maybe change, if it does at all?
We're not quite there yet, because in the NFBC format, with how deep the rosters are, we're 15 picks in, and you're only halfway done with your
That's true.
Well, you're halfway done with your roster, but you still have eight more spots to go. Yeah. So that's a good chunk of your team left that you're going to have to throw out there. And depending on how pitcher heavy you're going, it definitely changes things. But I'm still looking for, at this, as we go into pick around 16, 17, 18, I'm still looking for very solid production. And we'll see that as we go over my next few picks. And also, too, the player pool kind of dictates that. So, like, if there's someone who's not really that reliable anymore, okay, maybe I'll take an upside play. So it's kind of based on who's left for me. And the ADP is so sharp now that all the, I guess, full-timers, quote-unquote, are kind of getting taken first. So it kind of helps you with your selection. But, as you get farther and farther into the draft, it's more about the ceiling. It's more of the target versus the floor. But trying to find that balance of, okay, this guy's going to play all the time, but maybe he can go off. Like, as my next pick is, give it up now, is Eloy. So Eloy would have hopefully played if he was healthy, and he had massive upside if he could stay healthy. So that's where I went next.
Oh, no, I can see that when you say that, when I look at your next picture. So you went Eloy. I think we all know how that goes. I'll give the NFBC credit because you sent this to me yesterday. They have Baltimore under his team, and he was the White Sox when you drafted him. So they kept updating stickers throughout the season, which is kind
of funny.
That is funny when I see that. You would think stickers wouldn't be on the, but maybe it's just through the system. They had to update it anyway, so kind of maybe automatically updates. But that makes me funny. That makes me laugh looking at that. So we know the Eloy story, and I get it. I think I took a couple chances here and there on Eloy. And then you had, you know, honestly, one of the best picks in the draft in round 17 at first when Ron Washington didn't know how to utilize his best talent, and then it was getting utilized, and then he got hurt. That's Luis Rengifo, the mascot. He was great. That's an awesome Swiss Army knife pick. Garrett Whitlock, that's kind of an upside pitcher. Ryan Jeffers is your catcher, too. That started out amazing. He actually played okay towards the end, but most people weren't rostering him by then. Eugenio Suarez, my goodness, but we won't get into that. And then Jeff McNeil. So that kind of Eugenio wraps up the next five. So you went four hitters. You went to your second catcher. You went with a sixth potential starting pitcher in this situation. What was your thought process going through this? Eloy, Rengifo, Eugenio, Jeffers. You really loaded up on bats, given you took a lot of pitchers earlier.
Right. And so I mentioned earlier how I tracked the projections versus the 80th percentile targets. And Eli, he projected very well going into the season for where he was getting picked. He was definitely a value at that point, or at least at the top of the projected hitters list that I had of everyone who was remaining. The issue, of course, though, was the util only. But that's why I took Rengifo. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll take the chance on Eloy being like a 25 homer, 288 hitter with 80 RBI, maybe 65 runs at this point in the draft. Okay, that's pretty valuable. But then since I was clogging up my utility, I go, okay, well, I think Rengifo showing as my third base, as a third baseman, I forget where I used them the most. But I, for having my utility filled, I wanted to try to get some flexibility, and Rengifo was perfect for that. I didn't anticipate all the steals, but it ended up being very helpful for my team. And then Whitlock, yeah. So it's kind of annoying. So in DCs, I had two teams with Tanner Houck, and then I switched to Whitlock for my Fab Leagues. And so I don't know. It was promising for Whitlock. He started out pretty well, but then he's got hurt right away. So that one stings. And then Jeffers was identical to Heim. They both got off the great starts. And then Christian Vasquez, as you know, was splitting time with Jeffers. So I just couldn't drop him. The 15 of them was so hard, especially with Jeffers' power. Yeah. You had too much power upside Jeffers, so I couldn't do it. And then Suarez, he had four homers for me, Bubba. He finished with 30. I dropped him on June 1st. I looked today.
Yeah, no, I knew how that one was ending. Mullins, and so, like, and this is the fun part. Oh. Yeah. I say things sarcastically because I'm very.
I'm smiling, guy. Bubba.
I try to find the fun in things because, like, we talked a lot throughout the last couple months about the Suarez situation. Like, Ben is so statistically like mindset. Like, he basically already knew like the stats every week updated from what Suarez would have given him. Like, he had it all like figured out, even compared to who he added for all these things. He had it all figured out. So if you think Ben wasn't stressing about it, then yeah. But I try to like just kind of chuckle a little bit about it just because I wrote that Jordan Lawler was going to come up and they're going to DFA Eugenio because he was garbage, hot garbage, like not MLB talent at the time when you dropped him. So that was fair. Then Jordan Lawler gets hurt, kind of extends the leash for Suarez, and somehow He found HGH, the Fountain of Youth. I don't know, but we all know how the story ended there. So that was pretty, because you weren't, I guarantee you weren't alone in that one. But yeah, that's another one of those kind of gut punches looking back on things.
Yeah.
But all right. Yeah.
So I was listening to Sleeper in the Bus, and I don't know if it was Paul or Justin who was saying it, but they were saying how Suarez starts out really slowly. I don't know, but like he had a down year last year, and then he was hitting under 200 with no power. That's what he's supposed to do.
And he's getting old. Like, you're waiting for that to just kind of
right. be the I thought thing. He was declining. Yeah. And then now he goes off as hot as anybody in the second half. It's just, things would have been a lot different if I had never dropped Suarez. Just yeah. to say that.
Yeah, it happens. The next five picks, though, you only had, I believe, three outfielders before this. So you went Jeff McNeil, Harrison Bader, then you went Tyler McGill for another starting pitcher, Garrett Mitchell, who ended up being very good, Kyle Hendricks. Now we're talking 15 team leagues, folks. Yeah. And so two, that was your next five. So we're sitting there. That's picks 20 through 25. McNeil, Bader, McGill, Mitchell, Hendricks. That screams 15 team leagues right there. You did not see that in the OC. So this is where Ben's brain takes over way past mine, thinking, okay, this is how we're going to round out this roster, folks. What were your thoughts on these? Like I said, you only had three outfielders, so it made sense having to get some outfield play in here. And then you started getting some starting pitching depth.
Yeah, McNeil, I'm assuming I needed average help. I think I did at this point in the draft, or just like a little boost. And he also had second base and outfield. So going back to the Eloy pick, I like the flexibility of one of my outfielders being able to move around, especially with Renjifo already on my team. And Bader, I think I talked about this go at least once earlier in the year, and I compared Bader to Brennan Nimmo a couple years ago as same team, same position, going late around pick 300, and someone who had no risk at that point. So Nimmo used to always be injury prone. Bader has always been injury prone. I needed some more steals, and I figured, okay, well, he doesn't project the best, but he's going to play every day. And for the most part, he did. Like, he did lose time at the end of the season, Bader, and even along the way, they gave him days off the Mets, and I think it kept him healthy throughout the year, even though he didn't get a lot of plate appearances. But I'm not upset with the Bader pick. The McNeil pick was kind of a waste. That's like a projection. Okay, he looks like the best because of the average. And if I could go back, I would not pick McNeil there. I dropped him pretty quickly. And McGill was kind of like one of those spring training. Okay, let's see if it sticks. Like, he may have been pitching well again, but it didn't work out. I'll skip over Mitchell because I want to talk more about that later. And then Hendricks, I'm like, I was looking at this when I sent this to you. I go, what was I thinking taking Kyle Hendricks in the 25th round of the main event? And I know why. It's because, like, I try to draft everyone who's in a rotation. Like, that's my pitching pool. And when there's 15 teams with, like, probably 9 to 10 starters, you're almost drafting all the starters in MLB at that point. So everyone's on the table until, like, a move is made where someone gets called up or something. So he was a warm body, Hendricks. So that's why I did it. But I'm definitely going to try to avoid that next year. Like, that, this is no upside with that pick. And I should have gone for more upside there.
I'm glad you hit on that, because I was going to ask that. Like, where was the mindset in the I know it's quote unquote a safe floor, but there's not a whole lot to gain out of Kyle Hendricks.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I panicked, but looking at who went afterwards was Michael. I don't know. I didn't trust Michael Wacha. That was a mistake, because I could have taken him instead. But after that, it was like Taj Bradley, who was hurt, and then Joe Boyle, Jameson Taillon. So, I mean,
it gets rough.
It was good. It was pretty bad. So the pick was Michael Wacha, but I mean, hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah.
And then Mitchell. So Mitchell is a big name, and the mistake here, which I mentioned on the show, and because of this team in particular, one of the challenges I had trying to manage it throughout the year, he's a platoon bat, Mitchell, and yep. He was one of my starters, and or he could have been one of my starters.
To be fair, he shouldn't be a platoon bat. Going into the season, he wasn't. We didn't think he had platoon bat, and then he injured himself right before the season started.
Yes.
So sorry, I probably took some of their steam away, but I want to at least give you some credit. Like, he shouldn't have been. When he came back, he's been one the whole time, which has been annoying. But yes, when you drafted, I think many others that liked Garrett Mitchell, this was not a platoon situation, and he was supposed to play. So okay,
that's good to know. I mean, like, he has the 20/20 upside. He went seven. I think he had 7 homers, 8 RBIs, or 8 runs for me, and fewer than 200 plate appearances. So that's like a 20/20 pace right there. But by having guys like McNeil and then Mitchell as my well, Mitchell is bad luck. He got hurt, like you said, but it put me in a hole in outfield. And then I took Hunter Renfroe, who, I mean, I thought maybe he could bounce back and hit mid 20s homers, and he had his moments. Well, he was next, but yeah, the Mitchell pick left me a gap in my outfield. And I'm really going to try to avoid anyone who's projected the platoon. And, but like you said, you corrected me. He may not have that projection going into the season, Mitchell, but I'm going to be more careful if there's anyone who has a chance of that happening.
And also the other thing is, and I agree, when we talk about building our teams, like we want the at-bats, we want the guaranteed, like even the Hendricks part, you mentioned, hey, he's in a rotation. That's part of it. It's like, you know, he's starting every fifth day. So the problem is, especially in the depth of a 15, you know, you're talking 30 rounds, 15 teams. That's a lot of picks, folks. Like you're going deep in the player pool. Platoon's a big thing these days. Like that's where it comes down to when we analyze players for 2025. It's like, okay, these guys are actually locked into an everyday role, but I want to say almost every team has at least one outfield spot that's platooned, at least one. Some have multiple. Some have at least one infield spot. Like, it's not as cut and dry as it used to be. So getting this late in the draft, I could see that getting difficult at times, to say the least. All right, now it gets fun because we go to the last five picks for you here. And Yemi Garcia, a chance – well, he wasn't in Seattle yet, so they got all these changed. He was in Miami, and he was the closer at the time. So there's your third closer in round 26. That's not shabby. I love this upside pick in Brady Singer. I pounded the Brady Singer drum for years, and to get him in round 27, I think that turned out to be quite a friendly pickup there. Cole Irvin, there was ups and downs there. Hunter Renfroe, same thing. And then Johnny Brito. So last five picks, you rounded out your roster. You went four pitchers, one closer, three starters. What were you thinking on this one?
Yeah, so by waiting I'm at closer, taking Finnegan, he was kind of late, but he was one of the better RP2s. I wanted, okay, if Jimmy gets the closer role, I think it was Toronto at that point, because I think he was
Romano was
hurt.
You're right.
So there was a chance that he could have been the closer. Okay, maybe I have three closers to start the year and go from there. So that was that pick. Yes, I have to say, I think you got me back on the Singer bandwagon because he burned me last year. And I figured at pick 27.
What do you have to lose?
Yeah, there's nothing to lose. And I played him a lot this year. So he was almost a staple of my lineups every week. So that was a great pick. Cole Irvin, I had him a lot last year. I had him on a bunch of DCs. He kind of gets the job done when he pitches. And
yep.
I don't know why I had Hendricks ahead of him in my rankings. But, I think Irvin was a cut pretty quickly. Renfroe just struggled so badly. And then Brito never even made the rotation. I think it was more like a spring training flyer because they hadn't announced the final teams yet. Final rosters. So yeah. I swung a miss on Brito, but as my last pick, doesn't hurt me.
Well, because he was the Yankees. He was in San Diego. He came over the Michael King trade.
Yes.
Soto trade. Sorry, not the Michael King trade, the Soto trade. Let me say that appropriately. Gosh, give him his dues. I got a Yankees guy over here. Better say this the right way. The Soto trade.
I like King, though. I won't be offended.
I'm like, King still blows my mind that he's pitched as many innings as he did this year. I did not see that coming. Brito, I'm with you because it was Brito and a couple other guys that came over that we all said, oh, they got a shot to be the fifth man. They got a shot. Like, it was kind of an up for grabs. I know I've had Brito on some DCs. So I was taking the gamble there. So at pick 30, why not? Why not take a shot on that one? So I get it. I get it for sure. All right, then. So we've went through all 30 picks. Just so if anybody's listening, this is going to be part one. We're going to do part two next week because I don't want to rush through the fab, the in-season process. We'll talk about that next week. We went deep in this roster. So we'll talk some more draft talk here, though. We'll wrap it up, and then we'll do part two next week to really dig in on the in-season management of this roster. Okay, so you mentioned it when I cut you off earlier about overall mindset and how it played in later in your draft. Okay, elaborate now. Now we've gone through all 30 picks. You got a lot of pitching late. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. You waited on some catchers. You got some extra closers, so on and so forth. How did the end game play to your overall mindset on drafting?
You're talking about like the end game in terms of my last like handful of picks?
When I stopped you earlier in the pod around like pick 8 or something, you're talking about your overall mindset when you're drafting. You said there's another you had more of an impact on your overall mindset as the draft went on later in the draft that helped dictate some of your picks. Maybe I misunderstood you, but that's what I was understanding.
Oh yeah. So yes. So when I look at the projections, like I really want to get that floor and compare that to the 8th percentile, because one thing I also want to look at too is how good am I at predicting the 8th percentile? Because what I do is I take like the last 3 years of data for the main event in the DC, and I try to do like a weighting estimate of how much I want to weight each of the last 3 years. Okay. So I want to go back and see how accurate I've been, because now that I have a few years of my own data to look back at, okay, maybe I can make a better percentage going to each of the last 3 years, going for next year, perhaps, you know, maybe try to get more accurate targets. But like with I didn't get into Ketel Marte as much, but he jumped off the page as a value pick because of his projection. The only issue, I remember you and Ryan were skeptical of him, was the injury history. Yep. Which is fair, because he had that one massive year in 2019, which everyone was suspicious of because of the juice ball. And then he never really had a full year after that was nearly as close. And then this year, I think he had a better year this year than 2019 probably. And at that point, and that's kind of like the Santander pick. So Santander was projected for probably the most homers, runs, and RBI at that point, but he has a bad average. So, but like those two picks, they complement each other. And you definitely want to be mindful of the average, but like I look at it, but I'm really worried about the four counting stats. I just don't want to, like, I didn't want to draft a Kyle Schwarber again. Of course, he hit like 250 this year and would have been fine, but I was really trying to avoid those pitfalls because of the massive pool that you're competing against. And then like Santander and Marte are really, they're like two of the picks that really made my team as competitive as it was, I think. Like, I didn't really miss early on, which is definitely helpful for like my first six picks. They were all relatively healthy. Cody's a little bit of a disappointment, but everyone else basically was contributing most of the year. And then you get two first round players or top four round players in value of Marte and Santander there in rounds 9 and 11. And that's how you elevate your team to being at the top. And yes, it's fortunate, like Santander fell to me, but Marte was kind of a target for me. I was fine taking him in that range. It's just that with Marte, you're not getting steals at a middle infield position, which kind of hurts, but we'll get into, like you said, the ads eventually, how you make up for that sort of thing. But like Marte was projected for probably 80 RBI, 80 runs, 25 homers with a good average. You can't really pass that up if you're looking at an overall competition like the main event is.
I think that's a great point, because again, some of us like to draft to round out our team, round out our stats, and you kind of adjust on the fly. It's kind of what, like, you take the best player there and you realize it's going to get you on. He ended with 7 steals this year. He had 7. And at that point in the draft, you had Harper, who you hope he runs a lot, but you know it's kind of been declining. That's just the reality of it. Lindor, you could see another 30. He had a 30-30 season coming into this year, so that's a plus, big plus. Bellinger, you never know. He's had the big seasons, the low seasons. So you drafted Tyro, assuming 20-plus steals. Obviously, we know how that went. You drafted Sed for 20-plus steals. He got there. Not on your team, but he got there. and then, like, Ringifo, he was doing his thing. He got hurt. You drafted Bader for it. That didn't pan out. So I can't wait to get into, when we talk about your fab pickups, to what helped you get to your stolen bases, because – or maybe that's the spot that kind of hurt you. I don't know. But looking at your initial draft, that would be, like, my first takeaway. Yeah, stolen bases might be a little bleak on this roster, but obviously that's why we play 27 fab periods, to fix these situations.
I will say, though, I'd rather be coming out of a draft. You're never going to be perfectly balanced unless, like, everyone just does something weird and the perfect team falls to you. I'd rather be short in saves and steals. I've learned those are the two categories I'd rather come out of a draft short in.
That's good to know. See, that's a great point, is saves and steals, fab market, that kind of deal, which is a plus. Looking at this team as well, like, again, I already know, you know, this, that, and the other of who's around and who's not, but, you know, Grayson eventually gets dropped because he's hurt, but not because of production. Alzolay gets dropped, though, because he's hurt rather early in the year, too. So that's one to adjust. So getting that third closer at the time was good. Lodolo probably got dropped at some point in the process. Tyro definitely got dropped along the way. We know Cedric got dropped. I'm just doing it for the listeners here. Eloy probably got dropped. Ringifo got dropped. Whitlock might have got dropped. Eugenio got dropped. McNeil. So we're talking about 2/3 of your team probably flipped here. All things, as I even got to the last 10 picks, we know Brito, Cole Irvin, Kyle Hendricks, like those are all moving on. So my point is, and this is kind of a preview for next week's show, but when you left this draft with 30 picks and just knowing roughly two thirds aren't even going to be there, but at the, and you still finished where you finished. When you left the draft though, I don't know if you still have what your projections were, where did it have you sitting? If you can just give me a rough idea off the top of your head, doesn't have to be the exact numbers, but like, I know you're looking at 80th percentile. How did you line up in these scenarios?
Actually, you know what? I kind of want to do that. So let's, it's going to take some time, though.
That's fine. While you're doing that, so when you mentioned the 80th percentile, like for those that are keeping track at home, like Ben said, he goes, looks at previous seasons. You basically want to know what stat in each category do you need to be in the 80th percentile of your leagues to get those points. In a roto league, there's a main event league, there's 15 points per category. So your 80th percentile, obviously 50% is like 7.5 points. 80th percentile, what are you, 12? Points, 12 and a half points, something up there, maybe 13, something in that range. So that'll put you in a position to obviously win your league, let alone help you compete for the overall if you're dominating in each category. Now, again, like Ben said, if you're going to not dominate a category at the draft table, saves and steals, because you can adjust on the fly throughout the fab with that. But I know a lot of smart people do this with the 80th percentile. Guys make their own charts. There's also like things you can buy online that are very, very serviceable. I've used some. I'm just not quick with stuff electronically, as we know. So that's not how all things go in my world, but they are helpful if you believe in the projections and you can follow. And the biggest thing is just not reaching in the draft when you're looking at the numbers. Like that was why the Ketel Marte part that Ben mentioned, I thought was big, because it showed he was the top quote unquote value at the time. But you knew it wasn't going to help you in steals. And he was already kind of behind in steals. So to be able to not panic and take Tyro at that time and then probably missing on Marte or take somebody else, that's the thing you have to be able to control yourself on when you're using the 80th percentile. It's a good barometer of what's going on, but don't make it influence your pick, if that makes sense. So that's kind of something. I don't know if you're ready yet, but I can keep ad-libbing as we go.
Nope, that was perfect. Thank you.
Okay, what I got?
All right. So as you were talking, thank you for filibustering for me. I went through and basically repopulated my spreadsheet from last offseason for this past draft season with the first 14 hitters that I selected. So my targets based on the previous 3 years of the main event were 1,056 runs for my team, 298 homers, 1,023 RBI. I think my actual team was very close to these numbers. Actually, now that I think about it, it's actually kind of funny. 1,023 RBI, 187 steals. And then I don't have a target for the average on this. I was just looking at.
It's always a tough one.
Yeah. So I was able to calculate it, but what my current, my team average was through the projections, but I didn't really have a target. I just wanted to make sure like it didn't get too low. So it was 1,056 for runs, almost 300 homers, 1,023 RBI, 187 steals. My team projected with 992 runs, so I was short 63, 281 homers, I was short 17, 980 RBI, I was short 43, and 155 steals, I was short 32. So I probably wasn't feeling the best coming out of that in terms of projections, but it's such a hard draft room, and they're just projections anyway. And if you look at the at-bats, like it's not projecting that you're going to have full plate appearances for all 14 positions. You're going to make fab moves. So you're really just drafting a foundation, and you're trying to get as balanced of a foundation as possible and as close to all four targets, in my case, as possible. So Bader only projected for 373 at-bats. You probably didn't get many more than that.
And no, it's pretty close.
Yeah, well, like we'll go into the projection review, like you mentioned at some point, and we'll point out like who was really close, who was really far off, things like that. But yeah, looking back, I only really had 6 guys with double-digit steals projected, Harper being one of them. So yes, I was definitely short in steals, but I was really close to 17 homers across 14 positions. Isn't that bad? That's one homer per spot I was short, which I don't think that's terrible.
That comment right there is another way to look at it and not stress out. I think some people see 17 homers and go, how do I make up 17 homers? But then you just said it's one per position. It's really not as – it's 17 homers still a lot. I'm not saying it's not, but when you take it back and look kind of granularly at the whole thing and you go, okay, you know, someone's going to get hurt. I'm going to have to make a roster move. Some guys are just going to suck, and I'm going to stream for the week. Like, that's just the reality of it. And I know a lot of us talk about it when we're like, when we do our Fab show with my, when Ryan and I do our Fab show and we recap Fab, like the whole concept is, man, can I get this guy to get me one home run this week? Like, I used to talk like towards the end of the season when I was kept pumping Yastrzemski. I'm like, the dude's getting you 1 to 2 home runs every week right now. Like, he's not hitting for average, but you don't expect that. But he's getting you 1 to 2 home runs. You know how huge that is over like a 6 week period? Like, that is tremendous. And that's where you kind of have to sit back and look at the whole picture of why, like, people are like, why would you pick up? Yeah, I get it. Not appealing. Like, but if you look at what you need power wise, that's freaking awesome. That's just one example. There's a lot of that throughout the season of just one home run, 17 home runs, like, you stuff like that. You can pick that up along the way per se and make some things work. I'm trying not to get too in depth where we start talking about in season, because I have some things you said there I really want to take over to next episode. But I figure if we don't cut this off pretty soon, we're going to talk for 2.5 hours, which is totally cool. Cause I think there's a lot people can gain from this, at least to see how you went through it, to maybe learn different like terminology approaches. Just like a lot of things, just to kind of sit back and go, hey, this is another way to, I love doing these shows because like I've had Guilds on, I've had Drew on, I've had a lot of successful players on, and I learn a ton from these because there's so many different ways to win in fantasy. But in the end, you still have to have the numbers to win in fantasy. And a lot of the smart minds like Ben are kind of targeting the same numbers. And these numbers are applicable to anybody. You can find them anywhere. They're available online. Like, it's not a hidden formula like the 80th percentile. I mean, like, guys have their projection formulas. That's probably hidden. But to set up a base that you're trying to target, that's available for anybody to find. That's simple stuff. Maybe I can find it and we'll promote it later this offseason. So it's just simple. Boom, there, done. Any other things on the draft part of this as you get ready to prepare for in-season stuff, and we'll hit that next week. But anything we might have missed, because you went through why you did what you did, you went through your 80th percentile, you used your projections. Maybe the projections didn't go so well. Maybe they did. Obviously, you can't predict injuries or performance. What else could we hit on here before we wrap it up?
Well, mentally, I remember so my favorite main event that I had was my first one. And that one started out J-Rod, Pablo, Ozzy. Who was my fifth? Sounds maybe I good. Took, I had Eflin, I had Jesus Luzardo, and I ended up finishing 10th. But I thought it was my favorite draft.
That's a heck of a fun start too.
Oh yeah. It's the one that I wrote up for Sports Ethos. But going, I remember this draft, I'm like, oh man, this looks different. Cause like I said, it wasn't like my other DCs where I took King early as my SP4. I ended up taking a catcher very late, later than I wanted to. Heim was in like the last of that tier, but he was round 13, almost pick 180. I was trying to go a little bit earlier, a couple of rounds earlier in my catchers. But my point is that it may not look good, but it could be your best team. Like this one was arguably my best team. It did finish third, but I did have a team finish second. But I mean, for this being a main event, it was definitely my best. I mean, no question, it was my best main event of the three I drafted, but it was one of my top two teams that I had this year, and I didn't think so at the time. Like, you kind of just have to be ready to like swerve in the draft room, as you know. And picking 12th, when you have such an appealing top half of the draft with Acuna, Strider, Witt, J-Rod, Betts, Tucker, Carroll dropped to seventh year. Like, all these guys look so good, and then I had a reach on Lindor because I took him. 16, 17, 18. I took him 19th overall, and his ADP was like 30. But
yep.
I mean, I'm happy. Like, I took Lindor and two of my teams that cashed, and I don't think it's a coincidence because I thought he was being overshadowed in ADP or overlooked in ADP. And I kind of want to do more of that this year. Like, going into this last season, I also, when I made my projections, when I do my own rankings, I used to take like ADP from NFBC as a starting point. I didn't want any bias. So what I did was I downloaded Steamer when I was ready to start doing my rankings, but I put it in a separate like Excel file. I sorted by projected plate appearances for hitters and innings for pitchers, and this had a list of who's going to play the most. And then I went by position and I said, okay, these are the guys who are going to play the most. So they're probably going to be ranked highly. So that was how I kind of built my rankings foundation. And I'm glad I did that. So I think doing that like kind of helped me appreciate Lindor more, and it helps keep that bias out of my head when I go to do my rankings. Like, because like you could just download NFBC ADP and call it a day. But I want to try to get that edge, you know, and kind of differentiate myself from what everyone's seeing in the draft room. And I so that's kind of like, I think it's applicable to what we're talking about now. It's like draft prep. But doing that, I think, was really a big change for most of my teams being competitive this year, at least, even though they didn't like, I didn't have any winning teams, but they were all competitive throughout the season. So I think that played a big role in that.
Yeah, and that's a great point you're making there about taking the biases out of it, because I know a lot of us have talked about it. It's tough. We're humans. We have biases. This guy screwed us last year. This guy was awesome for us. We really like this guy. Like, there's a million reasons we have a bias on certain players, but there's value. They're like, especially using projections. So I get it, and it's a question a lot of people ask, like, how do you use ADP? I like to say it's a great way to, as you're kind of building out your, I guess, your roadmap as you draft. It gives you an idea of when you can play with fire type thing and when you can't, because there's a reason there's like a pocket of where they go. So it's like you said, you like Lindor, you know, you have to take him, so on and so forth. That goes later in the draft, same thing. Find your guys, do your thing. So yeah, it's a good point to kind of just erase bias. Don't look at ADP and see where it goes. It's a great tool. Love ADP. Love having it. Gives us a lot of options. But I know a lot of the really successful players, they go in there with their players that they like. They got their projections. And like you mentioned it with Lindor. I've heard Toby mention it with like some of his players that he likes. Like, he's going to get this guy because his formula, his sheet says this is the best player right now. It's 40 picks off ADP, but this is the best player, so we're going to get this guy. And it works a lot more than it does, it feels like. And definitely something to keep in mind going forward, that's for sure. Especially for, you know, the big projection guys like myself here who can, you know, manipulate all that stuff.
So. We'll convert you, Bubba. Don't worry.
I love projections. I just don't know how to, you know, make these cool formulas type things. I love
We'll get that stone tablet whistling soon enough. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't you worry. It's going to be, you know, once this winter time comes around and rain starts, I'm stuck inside all day. I'm going to start engraving some stuff. It's going to be wild around here. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there. That was a lot of fun. I think there's a lot that people can take from that and then get ready for next week. Talking in season, we're going to talk fab. Setting rosters, looking at like, hey, how do you decide who to play first half of the week, second half of the week, so on and so forth. There's so much of a game within the game within the game when it comes to this. It's not just picking up guys in fab. It's so much deeper than that, and I don't think everybody understands that. I know I didn't at first, and I still don't completely get it. I know where their brain's at. I don't go to the level that many do. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about kind of dropping guys, all those kind of things, how aggressive you were, and so forth. I know you keep a record of what you got going on. So we'll check all that out and much, much more. But before we head out of here, again, I kind of had you do it already, but final thoughts before we wrap this one up.
No, it's fun to go through this, and I guess I'm testing my beliefs on, because I'm saying these things and making sure that it sounds right to me, because I'm already taking notes on things I want to try to do for next year already. And I also did that as well. So yeah, it's just good to, I think it's really valuable to look back, and I'm going to try to not move on to 2025 too soon. I want to do a little brief analysis, like look at the stack, the bat cast stuff for the bat speed, the projection comparison, and just really let everything marinate for this year before I move on and try to gain as much insight. And I don't want to overreact too. Like, yep. Because I know people always say, okay, what went wrong for me this year? I got to fix that. But maybe it was just bad luck, because a lot of what we do is luck dependent. I mean, I do all these things to try to beat luck, but it's going to luck. Like, with this, how my team ended up finishing. Like, I was first at the end of week 26. I had a bad week 27 compared to the other teams around me, and I ended up still cashing, but I dropped to third place. It's just, I needed good fortune. I didn't have it that week, but just trying to put myself in a position where luck doesn't play as big of a role, and that's always the challenge.
Yep, I agree. So, and one thing you mentioned there, I think one of the best things to do for the first, you know, we all want to start drafting, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to pretend that that's not a thing, but I've always said it, I know you've just said it there, and I've become a bigger believer the longer I've done this. Use October. You can start drafting if you want, I'm not gonna tell you not to, But while you're still drafting, look back. What went right? What went wrong? I've mentioned it many times, and I'm going to dig in here pretty soon of, like, why did I suck so bad in pitching or hitting? Like, what happened? Like, I want to know these things before I start getting into some hardcore drafting. Like, I need to know these things. And there's more levels to that, obviously. So it's kind of what Ben was talking about, going back, looking at the process, what went right, what went wrong. I think it's a very valuable tool and definitely something to make yourself a better player going forward. And that's why we will recap more of Ben's draft next week. We'll go through the in-season work, see how it got to the finish line as to where it was. But until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm Matt BD Intrick, and this is Benched with Bubba, episode 691. Catch y'all next time.